Welcome to season 3, episode 10 of How to Build a Sustainable Music Career and Collect All Revenue Streams. I'm your host, author, and entrepreneur, Emily White. Huge thanks to the New York City Mayor's Office of Media and Entertainment for making this season happen. This live podcast taping is a part of New York Music Month, the official celebration of New York City's vibrant and dynamic music ecosystem.
Today's podcast is brought to you by our friends at VanZoogle. We want to take this time to congratulate VanZoogle members for surpassing $100 million, and really I think it's $110 million they just surpassed, in commission-free sales of music, merch, and tickets through their websites. VanZoogle makes it easy to build a stunning website and online store for your music in minutes. All the features you need are already built in, including dozens of fully customizable templates, tools to sell music, merch, and tickets commission-free, mailing list tools to grow your fan list and send newsletters, integrations with Bandcamp, SoundCloud, YouTube, Bands in Town, and more, so you can easily add content from your other online profiles, plus live support from their musician-friendly team. And I know that a lot of their team members are actually musicians, so that's nice as well. 7 days a week. Plans start at just $8.29 a month, which includes hosting and your own free custom domain name. How to Build a Sustainable Music Career and Collect All Revenue Streams podcast listeners can go to VanZoogle.com to try it free for 30 days and use the promo code SUSTAINABLE, all caps, to get 15% off the first year of any subscription. That's VanZoogle.com, promo code SUSTAINABLE. June also means it's Pride Month. I want to deeply thank our partners over at the Ally Coalition for supporting us and the crucial work that they're doing. Founded in 2013 by Jack and Rachel Antonoff, the Ally Coalition provides critical support for organizations dedicated to bettering the lives of LGBTQ youth and raises awareness about the systematic inequalities facing the LGBTQ population. The Ally Coalition is committed to bettering the lives of LGBTQ youth through tours, social media campaigns, and collaborative partnerships. To learn more and how you can get involved, visit theallycoalition.org. Okay, let's do this. So this is the final week of live podcast tapings to take you through the entire modern music industry in full. You've gotten your art together, you set up your text list via community.com and overall marketing channels before you began recording, so that's totally in place. Plus, you launched your pre-order or Patreon to monetize your music before it's even out. We've covered everything you need to do legally around your music, in particular, ensuring everyone in the studio signs a work-for-hire agreement, and you have a clear process to discuss and confirm songwriting splits. You've recorded your music, which is very exciting, and registered your songwriting with a performing rights organization and SongTrust or your publishing administrator. Last week, we dug in on the proper ways to distribute your music to receive the maximum amount of income while exploring where music distribution is headed via Web3. We also learned from Janae Brown, the Beyonce of marketing, on how to market with or without a budget, and discuss a lot with legendary concert promoter Peter Shapiro. Yesterday, we learned a ton about merch with Fourth Wall COO Eli Valentine. And today, we're going to review all revenue streams owed to you if you write, record, slash release music, and play live, in addition to bonus revenue streams if you want to do even more. So let's do this. You guys are my A-plus students for being here. You know, I've pushed a lot of sustainability throughout this podcast, which is data collection, you know, of email addresses and mobile phone numbers from your fans. That's the sustainability component, so you can communicate with them about your music and your shows directly forever, not relying on algorithms and social media platforms that come and go. And this is the recap of, like I said, all the revenue streams that are owed to you if you write music, if you record slash release music, and if you play live. So in the book that this podcast is based on, I have a public Google spreadsheet that you can access that's basically a revenue stream chart, and you can fill, I'm going to go through those revenue streams, but you can fill everything in, and if there's any blank rows or columns in that spreadsheet, you're missing revenue, right? So that's going to be pretty glaringly obvious, and then the spreadsheet is also set up to help you make projections, so you can estimate your monthly and annual income from your music, so it starts to feel like a real job in a good way. So that's in there for those that want to take the extra step. But first, I'm going to review the 12 revenue streams that are owed to you. Like I said, if you write music, if you record slash release music, and you play live. So the first is direct-to-fan distribution. That's going to be selling music and more through your website. That's where you're going to have the highest profit margins on your music and also collect all of your fans' contact info. Okay, so that's like the A-plus version. The second one is Bandcamp. So making sure your music is up and available on Bandcamp. That's where you're going to have the second highest profit margins and more often than not, also collect that fan email address, that fan contact information. The third one is distribution. Most of you know how to do that. So distributing your music through CD Baby, TuneCore, DistroKid, Label Engine, you know, getting your music up and out on all the streaming platforms. The fourth revenue stream is performing rights organization. So that's going to be ASCAP or BMI primarily in the U.S. Each country tends to have one performing rights organization. We have a few in the U.S., but for example, in Canada, that's going to be SOCAN. In France, that's going to be SACEM. In the U.K., it's going to be PRS. And if you don't register your songs within 2.5 years of releasing them, you never get that money. So hopefully we hammered that home in the Music Publishing Isn't Scary or Confusing episode. But please pick a performing rights organization, sign up for it, and have a process for yourself so you're registering your songs and not missing out on money. Now, if you are just signed up for, I mean, I've said this so many times, I just hope everybody hears me on this. If you are just signed up for your performing rights organization and you are not collecting on your music publishing in any other way, you are missing out on revenue. So music publishing is an additional revenue stream beyond performing rights organizations. So you can go sign up for Songtrust to collect on your music publishing, and that's if your music is being covered, streamed, sold, any of the above, which is all of you. Or, of course, sign with a music publisher who can administer and collect on your works on your behalf. Okay, so that's an additional revenue stream. Another one is SoundExchange. You need to make sure you sign up for SoundExchange, which is going to collect your royalties for your recordings from Pandora and from Sirius, basically internet radio, so non-interactive streaming, basically. So like on Spotify, you can go pick the song you want to listen to, but on Pandora, it's going to be like an artist channel, and you guys know how Sirius works. They're just going to play whatever based on the channel that you're listening to. Also, I highly recommend having a Patreon, or yesterday we learned about how Fourth Wall also has a membership club, so that's kind of your online fan club, and you also get the email addresses and data from that, so that's super huge. Yesterday, we also did a deep dive on making sure you have an online merch store. As you guys know, I really like what Fourth Wall is doing, how they have on-demand options, but they also have traditional options, so you can mix and match and obviously push that merch store, right? If it's just sitting online or in your link in bio or whatever, or in your link tree, nobody knows about it. So run sales, specials. It was nice to hear Eli really validate, like, do a sale for your birthday, right? Because then you're not competing with other folks' holiday sales and stuff like that. An additional, another revenue stream from there is obviously live performances. You know, we learned a lot about webcasting during the pandemic. There was a huge explosion in webcasting options, so I really like the platform Veeps or Volume, so you can do donation-based shows. This is a live podcast taping, so for the Tower folks, I think we have someone at the door if someone could come. Let them in. That would be awesome. Also, like I said, you can webcast. It can be donation-based. It can be ticketed and not necessarily just popping up on Instagram Live, but you can also build towards that. Don't forget live merch. I mean, it's a huge bummer when you go to see an artist that you love and there's no way to support them at the merch table, right? So that's also something you can set up with Fourth Wall or on your own. We went through a variety of options on merch. And then finally, YouTube royalties for your recordings. You can collect on that through AdRev, or Live Nation bought a company called IND Music that can help you collect on your recordings on YouTube. So I'll rip through that list really fast, just to recap really quick. It's in the book as well. So 12 different revenue streams that are owed to you if you write music, if you record / release music, and you play live. So direct a fan through your website, Bandcamp, digital distribution. So again, that's going to be your TuneCore, CD Baby, Label Engine, DistroKid, your performing rights organization, your publishing, which is separate from your performing rights organization. So that's going to be SongTrust or a publisher or publishing administrator, SoundExchange, Patreon or your fourth wall membership for an online fan club, your online merch store, live performances, webcast performances that you're accepting donations for or charging, live merch, and YouTube royalties on the recording side, because your royalties on the publishing side will be collected by SongTrust. So it's all set there. Now, if you have recorded outside of the United States, then you are also owed neighboring rights. To be honest, I don't really care if you remember what neighboring rights are. That's why I don't even go into like the sub-revenue streams of publishing. I just really wanted to hammer home in that episode. I wanted you to be able to clearly and simply define and understand what music publishing is and also know how to collect on it. And I feel the same way about neighboring rights. So if you recorded in Canada, if you recorded anywhere abroad, you can contact Centric or Premier, and they can help you collect on those neighboring rights. Now, I will explain what that is. So as we learned very early on, there's two main rights in music. There's the recording side, and there's the publishing side. So on the publishing side, you collect your performing rights organization royalties. Neighboring rights is the equivalent of that on the recording side, and every single country in the world pays this, except for the United States, North Korea, and Iran. So that's what sucks if you are recording in the US, which can be very frustrating. If that's something you're interested in creating a little more advocacy for, I recommend checking out Future of Music Coalition. They're an amazing artist advocacy group. Full disclosure, I've been on their board. But they really lobby in Congress to get this passed. It's basically like amazing nonprofits like Future of Music fighting with radio lobbyists who have a lot of money. It does come up in Congress every once in a while. Believe it or not, it is a bipartisan issue. So it's something to really bring up and push for. Because like I said, we're in the same boat as North Korea and Iran on that one. But the short part is, if you have recorded outside of the US, contact Centric or Premier, and they can help you collect those neighboring rights. And I definitely know, in fact, my business partner has her artists do this. I definitely know artists that do record in Canada and outside of the US on purpose so they can get those neighboring rights. Okay, so I also have a list of bonus revenue streams, which means they're not necessarily guaranteed, or you kind of have to go do something beyond just like release your music and or play live. So the first one is VIP live show offerings. Now, that's something I really think you can do at any level. You know, you can charge a little bit more to get coffee with your fans, to have them, come check out Soundcheck. So it's definitely something to keep in mind. It's also something you can do at your webcast. You know, you could do a VIP webcast and have a limited amount of fans, or if you're comfortable taking requests or doing some sort of Q&A. Or even just hanging out after like the normal webcast, right? And doing Q&A and stuff like that. Live recordings. I think this is something not nearly enough artists are taking advantage of. They definitely do in the jam band scene. They do that very well. In the pre-digital era, you didn't have, well, now you have the technology to record shows. But also in the pre-digital era, in addition to not really having the technology, you would have to be signed to record and distribute your music, and they would block you from recording your shows and doing anything with it. So to me, that's like a very wide open opportunity. And I totally understand why most artists don't take advantage of this, because, you know, I'm not an artist, but like we're really critical of ourselves, right? Like, oh, the recording isn't perfect, or my vocals aren't perfect. But think about it from the fans' perspective, right? They're like, oh my gosh, like they said Brooklyn, or oh my gosh, I heard myself, you know, scream or yell or whatever. And you could even put your recordings up on your website for donation or for subscription. So, you know, think about playing around with that as well. Now, so another bonus revenue stream, when I was managing artists, when we would take someone on, we would look at their catalog and see if it's if every release is out on vinyl. And if it isn't, we would, you know, we would do each release on vinyl once a year, if that makes sense. So we would take whichever one the artist wanted to start with, launch a pre-order, go through the same process, right? And then that's like a whole new revenue stream that otherwise was just sitting there. And if you sell a few hundred copies of any release on vinyl, contact the Coalition of Independent Music Stores, and they will, if you're selling like 300, which is a lot for vinyl, they will likely buy copies from you and then distribute it to record stores worldwide. So they're just gonna buy that vinyl directly from you. Sheet music is a revenue stream to keep in mind. So when I was working with a band called the Dresden Dolls, they're a keyboard drum duo, and we used to get a lot of requests for sheet music. And the singer of the band, Amanda Palmer, ended up putting together like photos in the sheet music book from the recordings and handwritten lyrics and a whole bunch of creative things. And it ended up being a really expensive book because there were photos and extra pages and stuff. It ended up retailing for like $50. But because it was such a beautiful book, it was literally called, because their debut album was self-titled, The Dresden Dolls Companion. There were fans who couldn't even read music who were then buying the book as a merch item and a coffee table book, right? So there's ways to get creative with sheet music for your fans that read music or don't read music. Music lessons, you know, I know artists that have played in Nine Inch Nails and the Violent Femmes and really massive bands that give vocal lessons via Skype or do drum lessons. So that can be a great additional income stream for you. Podcast revenue, that's in the bonus category because it is hard to generate revenue, you know, making podcasts. But I do love it if it's right for the artists. I certainly know some artists that wanted to foster a deeper connection with their audience or share a little bit more about their music. So basically kind of creating your own radio station. And this is like a whole podcast episode in and of itself, but Spotify is paying really high royalties to podcasters right now, kind of messed up since they built their business off the backs of musicians. But that's a segue into, you know, sponsorships, endorsements, and branding. Obviously, like the more listeners you have and the more you build it up, you can start to work with partners and sponsors. I also have sponsorships, endorsements, and branding as a bonus revenue stream because that's not guaranteed, right? And so, you know, partners aren't just looking for followers in your numbers. They're looking for engagement. So my company works with an artist named Julia Nunes that has really high engagement numbers. And so we are hit up by brands constantly that actually view her as an influencer, and she is. But we pitched a lot of really random products, and she obviously, you know, only works with things that she really believes in. And I know you all know that too, as artists. But also with sponsorships and endorsements, you know, you can start local, right? If there's local companies you want to partner with, or nonprofits you want to do a promo swap with, or maybe they have some sort of a budget, or frankly, Warm Audio kindly gave me this mic, you know. But I genuinely talk about Warm Audio in the book, so I was super excited about that. Speaking engagements. If that's something you're interested in doing, you could reach out to music schools, high schools, colleges, you know, share your experience, ask if they have a budget. Always ask that if you're being offered any sort of speaking engagement. And, you know, be proactive about sharing that. I always post, like, you know, before a speaking engagement, like, hey, looking forward to speaking at NYU. And then, you know, whenever I'm speaking at a conference, I give someone in the front row a copy of my book and my phone. And I'm like, hey, free book for anyone that takes photos. And then I have content to share after. And then more and more people see that. And it just leads to more and more speaking engagements. Sync revenue, that's in the bonus revenue stream category because that's not guaranteed. Like I interviewed Zoe Keating for the foreword of the book this podcast is based on, and she calls sync mana from heaven, right? So even though she lands a lot of sync placements, she doesn't know when that's coming. And of course, sync revenue only comes in if you own your rights or if you are signed to a publisher or label if you are recouped. So that's also why it's in the bonus category. And then, of course, you can generate revenue playing on other artists' recordings, as well as session work and shows, in addition to producing, mixing, mastering, remixing, and or arranging for other artists. So we'll have time for questions at the end, but hopefully that's helpful. But to bring this to life and much more, I'm going to share a little bit about our esteemed guest, artist Madison Rose. Madison Rose has slid down a rainbow from an alternate universe to wake everyone up to the full acceptance of others and, most importantly, themselves, which I love. This electrifying artist has been featured in Billboard, Paper Magazine, MTV, Rolling Stone, and more, racking up over 20 million streams. The self-proclaimed rainbow girl against a storm cloud world is authentically and independently on the rise and released her debut album Technicolor, as well as its deluxe Technicolor The Full Spectrum this year, which Paper calls a lesson in pop perfection. The album is receiving rave reviews, editorial playlist support, and a flurry of organic TikTok love. Madison Rose is breaking in the queer scene, but is primed to take over the world and every dance floor in it. A 2023 nominee for Breakout Musical Artist at the 2023 Queerty Awards, let's welcome Madison Rose. Come on down, Madison. And we did not plan our green outfits, so we're the green ladies today.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, of course. I was asking them upstairs, I was like, so when they say my name, do I just like descend down the stairs?
There you go.
So... Perfect. My descent. Hello,
yeah,
everyone.
Love it. So where are you from?
I feel like I'm from a lot of places at this point. Originally, I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio. Mm-hmm. I asked my mom to move to LA when I was 9 years old.
Nice.
I've always been a performer. Yep. And when you have no concept of the industry as a child, you're like, obviously, I'm going to go to LA and be a Disney kid. Duh. So then we moved there. I lived in LA for 15 years. And then I just moved to New York last year.
Very cool.
So yeah, a lot of different places it feels like.
Pretty nice mom.
Oh, my mom's the best. She's so, so supportive and I'm really, really like lucky. I can't believe she's my mom.
Very cool. Well, we'll get you out of here as soon as we can so you can have dinner with
No,
mom.
No. She knows. Duty calls, work calls.
Awesome. So as you mentioned, you're now based in New York City. Welcome. You've been here a year.
Thank you.
What does New York mean to you?
New York means... I think pushing the boundaries of my art and my personal life too. Just, I felt really stagnant in LA and I'd lived there for so long and had this idea of what my career had to look like. Mm. And I think with the pandemic, I was lucky that the pandemic actually opened a lot of doors for me online. And then that made me realize I really could be anywhere in the world and do what I loved.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to be happy. And I'd visited New York in the past, and I was like, I really felt at home here.
Yeah.
So I kind of just like bought a one-way and didn't really tell anyone. And
wow.
I just kind of left and came last year. And it's been like incredibly life-changing for me to be here.
Yeah. And I'm from Wisconsin originally. It's like, did these little girls in Ohio and Wisconsin know you can do this from anywhere? But
totally. And like, even going back to what I was saying before, when you're from there, me being nine, or I think even just when you grow up in like a Midwest mentality,
yeah.
It's very like binary of like, mm-hmm. Well, you go here and you do this because you grow up in that kind of Midwest binary anyway, like
yep.
Grow up, work for P&G, make a family, you know, do this kind
yes.
of thing. So then you have to break out of that, especially being in the entertainment industry and being in the music industry because mm-hmm. Thankfully for you, there's more of a rule book. You have an amazing book and are giving people tools. But I think overall in making it in this business, there is no rules.
Yeah.
And it's really just you have to have a strong sense of self and a gut to make decisions of what's going to be best for your career and figure out what you even want your career to look like. Because for everyone, it's different.
100%. The track from your debut video, Diamonds, has racked up 500,000 streams alone. How did drag culture inspire the look and feel of this video?
I think it's so amazing you're asking me about Diamonds because, like, nobody talks to me about that anymore. And it's such an important, it was an important start to my career. To answer your question about drag specifically, I think in general, how drag inspires me is it's like an exclamation point on life. And that's how I look at my work, is just how can it be louder, brighter, just bold. And that's something I've tried to carry through in my career since. So with Diamonds, it was just really that, like, how am I the most loud, like, expressive form of myself, especially since that was my debut single.
Very cool. I love it.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
So your career went viral during the pandemic with the release of Iconic. How did influencers like the Nava Rose and Arthur Osen pick up on the track?
Iconic is such a special moment, and I think goes to how it's like that phrase, luck, like preparedness meets opportunity.
Yeah.
So I think even the influencers that you named, like Nava is my preparedness. So Nava's an old friend of mine.
Cool.
But how we met is weird, and like it was like years before that I was invited onto like a YouTube show about clothes thrifting and like making an outfit. This is before I put out any music. It was really random, and she was a judge, and we just genuinely like hit it off.
Yeah.
And then we just kept in touch, and over the pandemic, you know, I saw like the work that she was doing on TikTok, and I reached out to her and was just genuinely like, hey, I really believe in this song. Yeah. Actually, I had reached out to her about another song before that, Rainbow Phone. And she did a video for that. And that really like gave it a great push. So then when Iconic came, I was like, hey, I've got another song, which I'm going to sidebar and give advice. Like, don't be afraid to just ask. Like, you cannot be scared, because a lot of the things that have happened for me would not have happened if I was like embarrassed of just asking people like, hey, I need help.
Right.
No, I don't have an influencer budget. Like, but you've known me for a while. You see me working. And then people genuinely want to help you when they see that you help yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that that's like why Nava and I really hit it off, because she's a hard worker. And so when I reached out about Iconic and I was like, hey, I've got this other thing, I think you could slay it. And she's like, absolutely. And so then when she put that out, it just caused like a trickle down effect of influencers who I don't even know personally, like Arthur Osen. I don't know them personally, but now we've connected through my music, and that caused so many like UGC genuine creations from Nava's video and from some other influencer friends of mine. So I think it's like making genuine relationships, that's what this industry is all about.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely. And I mean, that's how they became influencers too. It's like Nava's not going to push anything that.
Yeah. I think that's so true. Like trying to align with people that they stand for something. Because even, you know, we have to be honest with ourselves. There are even friends of mine who are influencers who I maybe wouldn't ask them to put my song up because I know that, you know, we all got to make a bag. And I know for them, they're promoting a lot. So I have to like have an outside look of that and know like their followers might not actually connect with this specifically because they kind of know when they're being sold to, or they don't exactly maybe trust this thing. But like Nava is a great example where she's 10 toes down on whatever she's putting out or any songs, and she's really so herself. So it was like a perfect match. And I think I've gained a lot of genuine listeners from being really strategic with like my influencer partnerships, I guess you could say.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. So why has TikTok worked for you in particular, and what can other artists learn from your experience?
I think TikTok works for me because you don't have to be so put together for the app. And I feel like, you know, Instagram has kind of evolved. And I think we're all trying to get back to it as a society. Like, I think we're all tired of feeling like we need to do professional photo shoots just to, like, post on Instagram. I think it shifted away from its initial thought, which is just genuinely sharing with people and genuinely connecting, where TikTok, I think people feel genuine connection with others. Yeah. And that's always what I wanted to do in my work. So I think that's why it works. Mm-hmm. But I think also I have to have my own boundaries with it as an artist and be like, I'm a human being. I can only be a machine so much. I don't post excessively when I can. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of, there's obviously ways that you work with the algorithm and like post 3 to 5 times a day. Like, we know these things, but it's like, we're also human beings. And yes. Sometimes I just can't do that. Like, but then I have to pick the moments where it's like, okay, I have a song coming,
yeah,
you know, and kind of reverse engineering it and being like, okay, if I know my song's coming on this day, then a month before that, I'm going to like be a little, pick back up and do the thing that we don't always want to do and you know, things like that. But then know when to take my vacation and then know when to take my break from the app. And I think that's also why I can have a good relationship with it, is because I don't let it run my life. And I also don't think that that is the only way that you market your music. Right. It is a super powerful tool, but it cannot be the only thing that you do. Because I couple that with like, yes, I'm really present online, but I'm also, this week alone, I have like 7 shows.
Yeah.
So like I'm out and I'm gigging and making those real life connections, because both are really important, the old school way of things and the new school. But yeah, that's why I think it worked well for me. And then also I met genuine influencers and made genuine friends who support me so much. And I feel like that's, I found community on there. I think that's why it works for me.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you talked about balance and that you're mixing that in. Super important. You talked about other ways of marketing yourselves. Anything else besides or yourself? Anything else besides shows?
I'll speak to like some marketing things I've done in the past with one of my songs, Rainbow Phone, because it literally is Rainbow Phone. I purchased like a covered number that was like 18. Cool. I think it was like 188 Roy G. Biv or something. Doesn't work now, but at the time, during that whole like press cycle of running that song, I had this number that I did it before the song came out, that fans could call in and hear a snippet of the song, that they could leave me voice messages, that they could text me. And then now I have that their phone numbers too.
Yeah.
So I can use that for later for other like data gathering things. Mm-hmm. So that was like a marketing thing that I did for that song. I try to be pretty site specific with each song if I can, because I feel like that makes it more of a moment. I love a theme. Like with Iconic, it really stuck in the drag community. So then for the marketing of that, it was like, okay, how can I connect with more? Like if this is working naturally, how can I push it even further? And connecting with certain drag artists and things like that. So I try to find a hook in each of my songs or my albums and then dig into the marketing further that way.
Love it. So for our live audience and our live stream audience, because we'll distribute this to podcasts in a few weeks, do you want to share any of your upcoming shows?
Yeah. Well, probably the one I'm most excited for is actually this Monday. I am opening for Aqua at Irving Plaza. And I'm really excited for that.
Yeah.
But there's all little things too. I'm doing a very like bus club, another club, Gaga moment over the weekend. I'm going to be in Times Square for a couple songs with Playbill on Friday. Saturday, then I fly to Seattle for a club, and then I come back, and then I will be performing for SoundCloud on Sunday, and then I run to Gitano, which is an island here, for like a pride party, and then another pride party at Pebble Bar, so just kind of keep the momentum going, and then I will take a nap after that.
Take naps throughout. I took a nap today.
Yes.
Very pro nap.
Oh, so pro nap. I love naps.
What is Beat Bread, and how has the platform supported your career financially?
Yay, Beat Bread. So Beat Bread is a really simple business model that was perfectly timed for me. Mm-hmm. Basically, they advance you your projected streaming revenue on your songs. So I had hit a point with my debut album that came out last year, Technicolor, where there was just some little finishing things that I needed to do. And I was like, how do I freaking pay for this? Like, how do I do this? I was working like 4 different jobs, various restaurants, social media gigs, like all these different things. And I was like, I need like, you know, I don't even need that much. I just like, I can't get there and I need to do it now.
Yeah.
Someone had mentioned Beat Bread to me in a session, and I was like, this sounds fake and weird. And I went and I looked at their site and I was like, this still sounds fake and weird. And then I left it alone, and it kind of like the universe, like it came up in a conversation months later and I was like, I need to actually look at this. Which another weird point of advice, I think as musicians, like there's so much changing rapidly and there's so many startups and so many companies. Like really do your research because you could be glossing over something that looks fake and weird and it's actually really helpful. So I've had to do that many times with and take chances on new companies because like I'm a new artist and there's something in that that's really serendipitous and beautiful to coexist in this way. But basically BeatBread, they have it. It's really simple. Like you put in your metrics and they look at your back catalog and you basically adjust the deal for what you want. But what's great about BeatBread is you can buy yourself out of the deal at any time. And it's not really like where with a label, it's like you're owing them God knows how much and when will you ever see any other revenue. You can adjust it to, you still see flow through revenue on your streaming. Mm-hmm. And that's the other part, they're only collecting on your streaming. So it's not like I was getting taken from any other way. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's basically the summation of what BeatBread does. And I did 2 rounds of funding with them, just to do finishing things at different parts of my projects. Mm-hmm. And then I recently bought myself out. And it was really seamless and pretty easy. Like it just wasn't, it's just not complicated. Mm-hmm. For them, their business model is really simple. Like, hey, you need the money. This is the money you were going to make anyway.
Yep.
Here it is. And now we're going to get out of your way.
Yeah.
So I think if you're at a point in your career where you're like, I know exactly what to do, mm-hmm. it would just be easier if I had like X amount of money, mm-hmm. maybe check it out. They're really a great team. They also were helpful, like even maybe in ways they didn't need to be, like extra little things on the side. Like it's great to work with these smaller up and coming companies because you still get that mm-hmm. kind of like handheld mm-hmm. support when you need it.
Yeah, if you go back to 10 episodes from this, we did a special episode on BeatBread.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so you own your rights, and I believe you need roughly 10,000 streams a month to qualify for their algorithm. But like you said, it's basically an advance on your streaming. So, and I only, you know, share companies that I think are doing great things. So it's awesome to hear your experience.
Yeah, I had a great experience with them, and I think it's like, it's also nice, I think, the way that they structure the deals. I never felt like, how am I going to, like, recoup this money?
Yeah.
How am I going to pay this back? How am I going to this? Like, we all think that we want, like, well, I want a $1 million deal. Well, of course you do. Like, more money is more money, is more money. But you have to pay that back.
Yeah.
So if you're not certain, it's like, that's not really helpful.
Right.
And I think that this is, like, a good stepping stone. And there's more and more companies that are, I think, giving artists stepping stones rather than kind of like throwing them in the deep end and being like, well, you figure it out. Like I just did another deal with an up and coming company, Duetti,
cool.
where they basically, you can sell parts of your back catalog, but you can do it song by song. And I think that's another thing that we'll see more and more from artists rather than like, hey, we're going to take everything. Right. It's a little bit more tailored to what is working. Like for me, it made sense to like, yeah, I can part with half of this one song and that will help my entire rest of my catalog. But it's nice. I think we're moving out of the like blanket deals for everybody kind of vibe that the music industry had before, which is amazing because it's not one size fits all. And we see that.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know how old you are and you don't have to share that, but very wise. I totally agree.
I'll share. It's actually my birthday like a couple weeks ago. I'm 27.
Yay. Happy belated.
Thank you.
Awesome.
I actually love sharing my age because I think that we also are moving out of the, like, you need to be a fetus to, like, be successful
totally.
In the industry. Not to say that I'm, like, I don't know, like,
no, totally.
Old. But I feel like that all the time. Like, even my putting out Diamonds, I was 21 when I put out that first single. And I was like, I'm old. I'm so old and I will never make it as a pop star. And that's just, like, so devastating. Like, why, like, you shouldn't feel, your dreams have no timeline.
That's
like,
right.
We even, you know, RIP, like, Tina Turner.
Mm-hmm.
How old was Tina Turner when she finally, like, really right. broke through in the way that we all dream of? And I feel like that just, mm-hmm. that is one of many stories that it's like, your time is your time. And just try to be prepared for your time by listening to your podcast
Thank you.
Following the checklist.
You're very sweet. I'll share an additional story on that. So there was a band that I saw in middle school because, like the main, they were friends with my girlfriend's older brothers, okay? Mm-hmm. And they became a pretty big band in Wisconsin. Maybe they could play like a big New Year's show, get a good payday or whatever, but I don't think they were doing much like regionally or whatever. The singer started like another band at some point. Anyway, he eventually, his wife got a job at the LA Times, like in advertising or something. So they moved, he was like literally like a farm kid and moved to Los Angeles. And I'm probably botching this, but close enough. She put up a Craigslist ad being like, my husband's really talented, like looking for people to play with. And so he ended up forming a band called The Record Company. And they are, I see some head nodding, they are really successful now. And he didn't find that success until his 40s.
Yeah.
So now it's like they've been nominated for Grammys and like, you know, they sell out the Riverside Theater in Milwaukee, which is probably 3,000 capacity. I'm not a big NFL person, but I was watching a Green Bay Packers playoff game and I heard their song. I was like, oh my gosh. Chris is probably freaking. And then I saw like on social media, he was just, it's like, he almost doesn't care about the Grammy nomination. He's like, my song is on.
Yeah, totally.
But the point is like, he is totally having mainstream financial success in his 40s.
Yeah. It's like, if someone came down from above and was like, hey, you're going to be really successful at 50, would you be like, that sucks? Like, no, like you just work and you work and then the work begets, begets all of that. And you just have to keep going. People don't fail. They quit.
Yeah.
So just don't quit.
Exactly. I love that. Okay, so we're going to get into the title of this episode, Revenue Stream Checklist. Thank you for doing this because I know it's not like the most creative.
No, I love it. If anything, when I was listening upstairs, I was like, you're teaching me things. I'm pretty sure I got most of them, but you're catching me at a great time because I'm kind of in the middle of making sure I have this foundation. And I think that that's what happens when you just have your artistic impulse to just like put out music.
Yep.
And then you're like, wait. There are all these business things I have to do too. So it's exciting. I've been doing a lot of like catch up and building and now I have more team members and things. So like, this is great. Let's do
it. Awesome. Okay, cool. And it, you know, really helps to illuminate and not just like have me read a list. You know, we had Lachi on for this episode last season and, you know, like I ran management companies for years and managers, which we'll talk about in the final episode, work on commission. So I had to learn all this stuff, right? If I want to eat. So let's do this. Do you have a website?
I do. I literally finally am getting it done and it is launching next week. Yay.
Exciting. Well, by the time this is out on podcast platforms, it'll be up. So what's the website?
I am madisonrose.com. It is the same as all of my socials.
Brilliant. Love that. Are you on Bandcamp?
I am on Bandcamp.
Love it. I saw that before this. How do you distribute your music?
Through DistroKid or TuneCore. It just kind of depends on what other companies I'm working with at the time, but one of the two.
Are you able to share why? Like why? Well, like why did you list two?
Listed two because I started with DistroKid as a heady kind of back, like annoying thing. Now that I'm working with Duetti on one song, just because that one song was attached to an entire album, they had to move that song to TuneCore. Yeah. And so then I had to move all of my other things to TuneCore.
Got it.
Which I'm kind of, even though it's like, okay, I'm split into these two places, it kind of interests me because I'm excited to look at the differences between the two. I think some of the biggest differences that I immediately see is just how much money it takes to put out your songs. Like DistroKid has just different fees, but I also like, just because I worked with the DistroKid team a little bit longer, had like direct contacts there. So it's like interesting to see what TuneCore will be, but that's why there's two.
Cool. No, that makes sense. I was just curious. Who is your performing rights organization?
ASCAP.
And have you been happy with that experience?
I have been. Honestly, correct me. I think in my experience, until you're at a certain place in your career, I think it's just important to just get one.
Yes.
And then I think once you get to the point where you're being offered like white label services, then you kind of look at maybe BMI is better, maybe ASCAP for you specifically, but like just get it in the first place. So that's kind of why I'm with ASCAP. I'm happy with it. That's my...
I think ASCAP is great. I think just go with ASCAP. I'm told, like, you so said what I completely agree with. Like, please just sign up because I've been meeting a lot of young artists and students who are like, I don't want to sign my rights away, or I'm scared. I'm like, this is not
that's
that.
Not what that
yeah,
is.
Exactly.
Yeah. But that's the thing, is it's like, there's so many things, and we're thankful for you, because there's so many things in the industry that feel very like red taped and not understood. And so it's easy to like feel like I'm signing something away. And it's like, Actually, you're signing up to get your money.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, ASCAP.
Cool. I really like the ASCAP folks. I think they... there's a lot of cool things there, and if they're not aware of you, I will make sure that
cool.
changes.
Cool, thank you.
How do you collect on your music publishing beyond ASCAP?
SongTrust.
Yeah.
I also have, like, I'm signed up on ASCAP as a publisher,
yes.
too. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm double dip. I don't know. Maybe I'm doing too much.
No.
Okay.
No, and I'll just re-clarify that, because that's why music publishing is the number one missing revenue stream I see with like artists of all ages and levels that I talk to. Because when you sign up with your PRO, they're going to encourage you to create a publishing designee. So a song that Madison wrote 100%, they're going to be like, okay, well, there's a 50% writer share that goes to Madison, and then it's going to nudge you, hey, create a publishing designee. So it doesn't matter if you know that, like Madison Rose Music or whatever. So of course, when someone says, how are you collecting on your publishing? It's like, oh, well, I'm with ASCAP. Oh, I'm with BMI. And that's just like what makes my head explode for the industry. Because again, if you are just collecting on your music publishing via your performing rights organization, ASCAP or BMI in the US, and you are not collecting on your music publishing in any other way, and your music is being covered, streamed, or sold, which is pretty much everyone, then you are missing out on money. So Madison is doing the right thing and is signed up with SongTrust, or you can sign with a music publisher. SongTrust is basically like TuneCore, DistroKid, CD Baby, self-serve for music publishing. It was founded by the principals at Downtown Music Publishing, who are the publishers for like John Lennon's catalog and J. Cole and a whole bunch of amazing people. So like you literally have the same collection agency as those artists. Yeah.
Yay.
A plus.
I did something right.
You did.
Nice.
You did. I mean, obviously you don't have to like share numbers, but like, was there money when you signed up for SongTrust?
Yes, there was.
Yeah.
Well, actually, SongTrust actually reached out to me.
Nice.
And they were like, you have money. Again, yeah. The things that you're like, this is weird and fake. It's not. And so I was like, I got emailed by a representative that was like, cool. You have money in here. You might want to look at that. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Rent.
Yeah. And I've heard that from a lot of artists that I've encouraged to sign up for SongTrust. And again, like, this is really messed up as far as the industry goes, and I would love for it to change, but there's no motivation for it to change. If you wouldn't have collected on that money within
two and
a half years of release, it's gone. It goes into the black box, which just means it gets redistributed to other artists. And as Matthew Wong pointed out on the publishing episode, pays for the ASCAP awards, or pays, which again, not to confuse, there isn't a SongTrust awards, but I'm just using that.
It pays for the SongTrust lunches.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they do throw pretty good parties that usually have like open bar and food and stuff. So you're getting...
Because the black box is crushing it.
Exactly. Amazing. Are you registered for Sound Exchange?
I am registered for Sound Exchange.
Great. Do you have any sort of online fan club or like Patreon?
That I don't have. I was thinking about that as you were saying it. I think that's my next step. I think I have to get out of my own way, and hopefully I'm like speaking to someone else, like that feeling that there's like that feeling like when you throw a birthday party, you're like, no one's gonna show up. Yeah. and I feel like I have to get out of my own way of that sometimes in my career, and it's like, who's gonna be one a part of my fan club? And it's like a lot of people, and it's all important, right? It's all steps, even if it's like just starts with 10, has to start somewhere. So stay tuned, maybe there will be a Patreon very, very soon.
I very much would subscribe, and you get the email addresses, which is nice. And I definitely know artists where their Patreon just covers all their bills.
Yeah.
So then, like, whatever they're making on shows or Beat Bread or whatever is then they it's like, oh, I can buy something for myself, you know?
What a concept. Yeah.
Exactly. Totally. And honestly, like, your online presence is so cool. Not that I want to, like, violate your privacy, but it's like, I would love to, like reach in and like be a part and like engage or just, you know, it doesn't even have to be that. It's like, you know, if you're comfortable, like post a demo or like a snapshot of an instrument, like something just for your Patreon people.
Yeah, I think sometimes I'm such a perfectionist. I just have to get out of my... That's most of this. It's just like getting out of your own way.
Right.
Being like, people want to see it unmanicured, as I just said about TikTok. But that's, I think, like a part of it. Maybe why. Now it's getting therapy. But you're so right. Okay, Patreon.
Well,
unmanicured.
Again... It's your art. It's your life. But, like, you have these amazing press shots. It's like, is there a BTS? Is there a behind-the-scenes version, right? Like, maybe that's for the... Obviously, like, once it's out there, but...
Yeah. No, but there are, because most of them are in people's garages or living rooms and things like that. So, yeah, we should show them.
Love it. Can fans buy your merch online?
They will be able to.
Yay!
When that website comes up. Yes, I've been working really hard on merch and doing a drop shipping method with it, so I don't have to do... It's a little bit more complicated than just saying drop shipping, but to make it simple, so that I don't have to have any like backlogged merch sitting in my house. It's 2023.
Yeah.
You don't need to print 100 shirts anymore. Right. It's like so silly.
Yeah, and that's what we learned yesterday. I really love this company, Fourth Wall. I did not know any humans there. I just reached out. I'm like, I love what you guys are doing. And they do both on-demand and traditional merch, which is nice because I feel like it's usually one or the other.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm working with a company. Also, it's called Drag Queen Merch.
Cool.
That they're doing the same thing, but it's nice because they have like a built-in fan base. Mm-hmm. And again, everything's tailored to like people's specific career. This I knew made a lot of sense for me because... I have a lot of crossover fan base with like RuPaul Drag Race fans. So I'll get a spot on their site and like a plug on their socials, but then the actual like point of sale will be directly through my site.
Yeah.
And then also house it on their site. So it's like I've got multiple different ways that people can buy and look at it. But they handle all of the like fulfillment. So I just stay out of the way. I just send the designs and keep it moving.
That's so awesome that you're getting sales through them, though, too.
Yeah, it's cool. I think nowadays, like, everything is kind of reliant on partnerships. Like, we all need support. And you just have to find, like, what makes sense. Like, whether that's, like, a brand sponsorship or, like, in this way. Like, it's kind of almost, like, collaborating with them in the fulfillment of my merch and things like that. It's just, like, so hard to do it on your own. And you're not meant to.
Right.
You know, we're community-based people. And that's, like, what... has to happen, I think.
100%. Did you do any webcasts or live streams during the pandemic?
I can't say that I really did. I did, you know, I did one, like a Zoom release party for a single that I had, but not specifically, not really like any Twitch or anything like that. But that's another thing. I'm like, I know people are making a killing.
Yeah.
And I wish there was like 10 of me to be doing everything at once. But I didn't personally.
I really like the platform Veeps. My nonprofit, I Voted, just did a webcast through them, and they actually definitely helped with a lot of marketing. And
very cool.
Yeah, so check out Veeps. The previous season of this podcast is on volume.com, so those are a couple of platforms where you can do, you know, ticketed or donation. But the most recent I Voted show we did on Veeps was just free, and we got a lot of viewers. And
awesome.
Yeah.
So cool.
So let's see, have you, obviously, you've returned to in real life performances. So what has that felt like?
Yes, that, I'm just so grateful. Like, I love performing. I'm a musical theater kid.
Yeah.
So I love the stage. It's where I feel like the most comfortable. Mm-hmm. And it's nice because everyone, I think, is really excited to be back and seeing that. And at this point, it's where I make most of my revenue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, other things come up. Definitely also because of the TikTok thing, I think I ride the line of I can dip into the influencer bag if I want to. But that, you know, those deals kind of come and go. I feel like with my live show, it's like I know exactly what I'm doing. I know exactly what it's worth.
Yeah.
And I know the markets that want to book me, and that's growing every day. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I love performing live. It's
how
awesome.
How do you know the markets that want to book you?
Because I have a booking agent, but my booking agent, but also I use my analytics. Like Spotify for Artists is amazing, just for like a basic look there, but also Chartmetric is amazing, which is obviously how we got connected, because that even gives you like a broader overview of everything. Yeah, and then I can actually like pinpoint, okay, where should I go next? Who wants to see me? It's great.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with Chartmetric. As Madison said, that is how we got connected through one of my former interns at iVoted, is now at Chartmetric and recommended Madison, and I was super excited. So you can go check out Chartmetric, see your top markets, and then also, which we talked about in the booking episode, if you're looking to play Cincinnati, Milwaukee, whatever, you can go see the top trending artists there. And it's not always what people are writing about, you know, like, there is a lot of racism and sexism in our industry. So that's something I really noticed, like downloading the Milwaukee data, for example, because I know that scene pretty well. And kind of the press darling artists that are like the Milwaukee artists to watch at South by Southwest were way at the bottom.
Yeah.
And then like, I've got to reach out to Quinto Sol, this Latin hip hop group, for the next iVoted show there, because they are just crushing it.
Amazing.
Yeah, in Milwaukee. So yeah, great answer. It's all about analytics for sure.
Yeah, it's also cool because with Chartmetric, like, that's like what labels are using.
Yeah.
Like I had, after I did an interview with Chartmetric, I had a friend of mine who works at a label who... they were in some sort of presentation meeting and they saw my photo on it and then texted me. They're like, we love Chartmetric and we're using da-da-da. Like, it's so cool to feel like we have the same tools at our, you know, at our disposal as like the big wigs, whatever that means. It just means they're in a building. It doesn't really mean anything.
They're in the black box.
They're in the black box. You don't even want to be in the black box.
No.
You want to be in the rainbow box.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And honestly, a lot of the big wigs aren't using these tools. Like, they're using that article, like, Milwaukee artists to watch at South By or whatever. So use these tools. Like, that's what it's about.
Yeah, totally.
Love it. Do you know if your YouTube royalties are being collected on for your recordings? That's definitely like an advanced placement question.
Okay. I think yes, but let's dig in deeper because maybe I'm calling it a different thing.
Sure.
YouTube content ID, is that what we're talking about?
Yes, but you might want to look into AdRev, which is also owned by the same company as SongPress.
Okay,
so
okay.
It's not fake and weird.
We'll make merch.
Yeah.
Fake and weird. Yeah.
I will buy that merch.
Okay, cool.
And then also, this is very lazy, but like there was a great company called IND Music that was acquired by Live Nation. So I always Google IND Music, Live Nation, find those guys' names when I need to contact them.
Okay. I think I need to double check that because that was the one I wasn't so sure about.
Yeah, I would double check that because the content ID is likely identifying it and then paying the publishing side to your SongTrust account, but it needs a side to pay it on the recording side.
Missing money. All right.
Yeah. And I don't quote me on this. I don't think there's a black box with that on the recording side. So.
Yeah. Okay. I'm on it.
Yeah.
I'm on it.
We found one. Not that I like want to find one, but it's like I want to help.
I want to find them. I love it. Keep going. Let's find more.
Well, that's all the ones that like are owed to you. Mm. Have you ever recorded outside of the US?
I have not.
Okay. Maybe consider it if it's not too much of a pain. Head up to Montreal or something.
Yeah. Like, after I overheard you, I was like, work trip.
Yeah.
Incoming. Yeah.
Exactly. Totally. Yeah. My business partner is like proactively making sure her artists do that if it's, you know, if they're close to a border.
Yeah. No, it makes total sense.
Yeah. Awesome.
Montreal.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So that's everything that's owed to you. Like I said, if you write, record, /release music, and play live. So now we have the bonus revenue stream checklist. Have you offered your fans VIP opportunities?
I have not yet. But again, overhearing what you were saying about inviting a sound check, getting a call, I think that's so brilliant. And like, getting out of our own way of thinking like you have to be at a certain level to offer a VIP, like you are VIP to someone who's whoever is coming, and you're like missing out on money when you don't look at yourself that way.
Yeah.
And have it be so simple. Mm-hmm. So now I am definitely going to do that because I'm like, I love having people watch me at soundcheck.
Yeah.
And now I can make some money.
And that's such a cool experience for the fan, and also like, you're beyond a developing artist, but it's like, think of how cool that is for an artist to be like, well, I saw Madison Rose's soundcheck. Like,
yeah, that's so cool.
Right.
You have such a big brain.
Oh,
it's like amazing. No, really. Like, you're incredible.
Like, I've just been doing this a long time. But we take this stuff for granted because these are not VIP experiences. But I was just at my brother's wedding, and his friend was there who used to intern for me. He's like, yeah, I really regret when you, Jesse's my brother, when you asked Jesse to sell merch for MGMT before they were big and he invited me and I didn't go, you know, or like my, my teenage cousin lost her mind when she found out, I've hung out with Jack Antonoff. Like I had a band opening for Fun a million years ago, you know? So think about that
experience.
I love Fun. Yeah, totally. But think about that experience, like checking out Soundcheck, you know, like as an artist goes. And also like, R.I.P. to the beloved Mandy Cuesta. But Mandy was a star intern of mine, and she used to spend her intern pay traveling around to see All Time Low, and she would pay. And yes, that is a bigger artist, but she would pay for the meet and greet every time. So you could also get people like who keep doing it.
Yeah.
You know?
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So much of, I feel like, being an artist is like, it is a therapy session because it's just believing in yourself and believing that like, you're not playing at something, like, this is what you do. And so this is the checklist of the things that the person who you are needs to do and like to show up in that way. So this is awesome. Thank you.
Good. And you know, like it starts with like chapter one, episode one is create great art, which you do.
Thank you.
And then, you know, I've always built, I don't manage artists anymore, but I've always built businesses around the artist, which to me means you create the great art. And then we take care of fans a very close second.
Yeah, the fans are they're the most important thing for me. I feel like sometimes when you're trying to rise, it's like the companies of it all try to make you think like they're the ones that are the most important, and they're not.
Totally.
Like, especially I think we've seen it so clearly with TikTok and with just the rise of social media, like your fans dictate everything. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of people who are friends of mine who are not signed and they've bought houses so that's like my goal is to buy a house and buy my mom a house and to maintain as much control as I can over my work.
Beautiful. And it's like, that's what we're talking about. Create great art and connect with your fans, connect with your audience. All this other stuff is supposed to help you do that. And I think this is kind of what you're alluding to. Don't get so distracted by all this other stuff.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. It's like, it's all helpful. It's all pieces to the puzzle. But at the end of the day, I do think it comes back to, as you were saying, like comes back to your art and it comes back to the people that you're trying to touch with that art.
Yep, absolutely. Do you record your shows? Knowing that most don't unless you're a jam band, but go ahead.
I don't. Yeah. But people have started to ask that. They're like, why is this not recorded? Why is this not on YouTube? Why is this not this? So we've got to do it.
Awesome.
So yeah.
Like I said, even if it's audio to get going and it doesn't have to be like the most perfect thing ever, it's about like, oh my gosh, Madison said this or did that or what, you know, it was like that unique or like the Ohio fans or whatever, you know?
Totally.
And like I said, it can be donation or subscription. It doesn't have to be, you know, some slick, perfect live recording. Now, you still are a newer artist. So is your catalog out on vinyl?
It will be.
Yay!
In this merch drop, too.
Great. And
it's been amazing because I wanted vinyl, but I was like, no one's going to want that. And then it's like, which is just so silly. But now I'm lucky. Like I have so many of my fans who every day, like, when can we get the vinyl? When can we get the vinyl? Imminently. Imminently, you will get this vinyl.
We want all the things from you. No more like,
yeah, I'm like, now, yeah, now yeah. I'm getting there. Again, and therapy has been really great for me too.
Yeah, of course.
Realizing that this is happening, you know?
But it's, you know, it's such a great example. Like, you can't do like, okay. So I was teaching a live concert planning and production class this spring, and some of the students in the class performed, and little Ava had this amazing metal band, this tiny little girl, and
so
she's a woman covering Rage Against the Machine. But anyway, she's like, my band, it's only our second show, so our band doesn't want to make merch. I mean, she wanted to make merch, but some of the band members don't want to make merch because will anyone buy it? I'm like, well, we can't buy it if there's no merch.
We can't buy it if you don't make it, yeah.
Yeah, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, so. No, it's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do all the things. Is your music available as sheet music?
It's not, but I think I need to do that.
Yeah.
That's so cool. The Dresden Doll story was sick.
Yeah, I mean, it was the bane of my existence at age 23, putting these photos,
right, fair.
Lyrics and everything together. But it is a beautiful coffee table book. And I know Hal Leonard and their platform Arrange Me is helping artists do that. So you can find people to help, like, score your music and
that's sick.
Put it all together, for sure. Have you ever given music lessons? I mean, I know you're really busy too.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to get into that soon with all the 7 shows, but
for sure.
No, I never did, but that's brilliant too. And another, like, who knows better than you if you're out there doing it to then give the advice. But no, I never did give music lessons.
Or God forbid, if there's some sort of pandemic situation again, you know.
Then there you go.
Yeah, yeah. You're just looking for stuff to do and.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, not able to play shows.
I think I'd more so really like to do songwriting courses.
Cool. Because
I write all my songs and.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think writing is just so special.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also, I know ASCAP has like a, if this is something you're interested in, like a film scoring camp or something.
Whoa, that sounds sick. I want to do that.
Yeah, definitely. And remind me and I can help put you in touch with folks
about that.
Yeah. Is podcasting something that interests you?
It does.
Cool.
And actually many people have asked me to start a podcast. Again, there needs to be 7 of me, but I do want to do it. But I think something that's like music adjacent,
yeah.
I have to just figure out, you know, what the log line is for it, but I want to do it.
Cool. And like, I wonder if there would be a way to combine that like with Patreon too.
Yeah.
Like they get the episodes early or something.
Smart. Yes. I think we have to have like a coffee or something.
I would love that. You're new to New York.
It's a game plan.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you feel about sponsorships and brands? Are you doing anything in that space?
I love sponsorships.
Cool.
If any sponsors are watching right now, I am Madison Rose. Anyway, no, I think it's really important. I think it's important to align with people you really believe in.
Yeah.
Which sounds easy, but it can get, especially when money starts to get involved, and you're like, man, I really need that to turn things down. But it's like, you have to always think of it like, I don't want to water down the brand.
Yeah.
So like a brand that I really love and have continuously built a relationship with is Arctic Fox Hair Dye.
Cool.
And they actually helped sponsor one of the music videos for Technicolor.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a video where I like shave my head on camera and then like magically my hair gets dyed like in Arctic Fox colors. And they, without them, that video wouldn't have gotten finished. And then working on new videos now where I figure out ways to like incorporate them in that. But that's like a long-standing building relationships. And if you don't mind if I sidebar on that really quick, about how like you can connect with sponsors and things. So you think you got to get creative. So with Arctic Fox, I modeled for them first.
Cool.
I had like big curly hair at the time, before I shaved my head. And when I was on set for that, I just like sought out the marketing director.
Yeah.
And I was like, hi, you are meeting me as a model, but like I'm actually a musician and I have some stuff coming up that I really think we could align on.
Mm-hmm.
And like I remember her face. Like I remember her being like, yeah, okay, because everyone is just gonna assume that like when you say like you make music, people are like, okay, let's like hear it.
Mm.
But I believed in myself and I was like, no, I know that they're gonna mess with this. And then that was how this started, was like from that meeting, then emailing, being really sure about myself in the pitch and being like, hey, you met me here. This is what I'm doing. This song, Technicolor Hair Dye, makes so much sense.
Totally.
And then that's how we've like stayed in connection. So I feel like when you're going to events, like look at who's sponsoring at the events that you go to. Like if we're at a club and you see that Liquid Death is everywhere, mm-hmm. is the Liquid Death sponsor there? Or maybe you can connect. Oh, like a lot of these people, they're there. They're just hanging out. And then, again, making the genuine connection of, like, hey, I have this song coming out that's called Liquid Death or, like, whatever it is. Like, something that's genuine and reaching out. Like, cold email works, too, as long as it's really, like, authentic and specific. But you probably, if you sat and thought about, like, situations you've been in with brands
mm-hmm.
already, you could probably connect with people that you have actually met in real life.
Totally. I wish I could share this artist's name, but I can't
legally.
Yeah. Mm. Well, the last time I worked for someone was like 15 years ago. I was at Live Nation Artists, which we were trying to sign like pretty much every big artist in the world. And in some ways we did. Madonna, U2, Jay-Z, Zac Brown. It was a new like $500 million division of Live Nation. Not to go on too much of a tangent. I was like 24 years old. I was like, this is either going to be the biggest thing ever or a big disaster. But if it's a disaster, it's a great learning experience. And so there was a major artist, throws it off a little, but like a big artist, he's kind of like a dark vibe type of person. But we were sent this list. It was like Red Bull, Whole Foods. But it's like, he clearly just looked around his house. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, we take this stuff for granted, but yeah. It's like, what is the stuff you're using?
Yeah. I like an energy drink that I love. Mm-hmm. I drink Goyaki yerba mates.
Totally.
Love them.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, I might as well reach out to them because then it's genuine.
Right.
And like, sometimes you don't, you know, it doesn't always immediately work, but it's like planting the seeds.
Totally.
And maybe it is at first. It's like, okay, they're just going to send me a case of product.
Yeah.
But then, okay, fine. I'll take photos of that product. I'll use that product on tour and be like, powered by Goyaki.
Yeah.
And then you can start to build and go back and turn that into something that's like a financially beneficial thing. Yep. I think it's not being afraid of the stepping stones.
Yeah.
No shortcuts.
Yeah, exactly. And like Liquid Death is a perfect example. It's like, they're not giving us any money, but they shipped a bunch of products. So we had free drinks for you guys.
Yeah. Like, and all of it like adds up to something.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many pieces to the puzzle. Like, yes. If you're doing a live show, people need something to drink.
So exactly.
It's money you didn't have to spend on a case of water, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Are you asked to do speaking engagements? You must.
More and more now.
Okay.
And now I'm starting to like adjust to that too. And the question of, is there a fee?
Yes.
First.
Exactly.
That in general always should be.
That's right.
Is like not being afraid of that with anything. I think like when you're growing, I can say this for myself, like you get reached out by someone and you're like, man, I really, really want to do this. Like always ask.
Yeah.
Unless it's something that's like, you know, genuine. I think up and coming people can spot other up and coming people and being like, okay, we're gonna do this as a mutually beneficial thing.
Yeah.
But it's like if Whole Foods.
Totally.
You better ask Whole Foods if they have a budget.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And like that's the thing, whether like it's a brand or you know, it's okay to ask other artists this too. Like, what's your budget? Three words. And then it's not saying like, here's my rate, or it's not like pricing you out of anything.
Yeah.
It's just asking or is there a, you know,
is there?
Yeah.
Cause also then it's you being more informed. Cause if there's not, okay, if you still want to do it, then you do it.
Yeah.
But also sometimes there is one and you're not going to know, even if it's simply like, hey, can you pay for my Uber there and back or something, you know, like just anything that's, we have to pay for so much stuff all the time. Like anything that lightens the load is helpful.
Yep. Yeah. So getting your expenses covered in the least. And then also, you know, if there is a budget, you can also ask, you can say, is this MFN? And that stands for most favored nations. And so that means everyone would be getting paid the same. So kind of like maybe a more modern example would be like Unsync, right? So if you get offered $5,000 for a sync placement, I mean, usually you would have someone negotiating that for you, but the sync person's going to say, well, here's our quote. Actually, we need 10,000 or MFN with the other art. And an older school way is like, that used to happen on soundtracks. So maybe you'd get, you know, a fee for a song on a soundtrack, but then you would want the folks negotiating for you, to ask for MFN or most favored nations. And then, so everyone on the soundtrack is getting paid the same. Obviously, if it's like Madonna or some huge, like they might get paid more or whatever. Like that's something like I should have been, I've since retired from teaching, but frankly, that's something I should have been better about. Mm-hmm. And my MFN with the male professors, frankly,
well,
you know?
Speak, work, yeah.
So, but also like, so MFN stands for most favored nations, but like, I want you to get that, but you're gonna look really smart if you say, and is this MFN with the other artists?
I felt smart just like listening to you, so I can't wait to say that.
Actually, like, so again, when I was teaching, which I did really enjoy, I was teaching this live, I was teaching management, that was two semesters ago, and there was also a record label class. And so, like, sometimes the students were managing an artist that were signed to the label, but they were also managing. And so they're like, well, we got this offer from the record label class for the artist. you know, can you help us? Can you take a look at it? I'm like, go back to Professor Tavern and be like, is this MFN with other? I was like, you're going to look? Because he's going to be like, what? I mean, they should know that. That's what we're trying to teach them. But totally. Anyway, so MFN. Write that down in your Hale Leonard notebooks. Speaking of sync, how has that landscape been for you?
What were you saying earlier about mana from the sky?
Yeah, totally.
Honestly, I've actually had more luck with it recently, but not in the traditional sense of like my music getting synced. I've been really excited to work with Fox Music. They've started a company, Fox Entertainment Music, where basically they're making catalog music for Fox. And so it's really, really fair deals where it is MFN and everyone's getting paid the same, whether kill fee or for the songs that we make in the day. And so that has been my little nudge into sync thus far. I've done a lot of briefs and stuff, but it's a competitive game, and it's also like such fast turnaround, I think, when you're also working as an artist, because like sometimes you get these calls and it's like, we need it in 48 hours, you know, and those are the people who like sit behind their computer and make music all day. So I can't always take every opportunity. But it's nice because then you just have that in your catalog for like you can always pitch. So I've started to see it, but it's a, you know, it's a compound effect. It'll be more momentum and stuff.
And so it's sporadic, but also I've probably shared in the sync episode, like not every artist's music syncs, right? It's synchronization. Yeah. So I've worked with like the Dresden Dolls, Fiery Furnaces, kind of like some weirder indie-er bands where they work with great sync companies, and sync companies will be like, music supervisors love this, they want to be on the guest list, but the music is too weird, they can't sync it to picture. And that's okay. You know, like those artists did well doing other things. So
Yeah, totally.
So don't feel bad, you know, if your music's not getting synced. And like I said, I've also worked with artists that like no one has ever heard of, but they crush it on sync. So
I also feel like don't make songs for TikTok. Like, don't make songs for sync. Like, it it doesn't, unless you're like responding to a brief, like your own personal artistry. You have to make that for you, and you need to like constantly remind yourself of that, because there's so much societal messaging of like, make it this way, make it under 2 minutes, make it like this, make it like that. Like, that's why I'm enjoying that Fox Music camp, because that's like so outside of Madison Rose. And it is a really like point A to point B, okay, you want it this way. But I would never go into a Madison Rose session and be like, we need to make a sync. It won't work.
Totally. Yeah. But you're right. You can also write for briefs and stuff. I might be totally wrong on this, but you'll get the idea. I think I just saw on Instagram, like, Neil Diamond wrote like the Kit Kat song, or like I just saw this, like, did you know Neil Diamond wrote like the Band-Aid song? And I might be messing up the artist, I might be messing up the commercials, but you get the idea.
But like, someone big writing jingles.
Yeah.
Doesn't shock me, but like, so cool. And also just lets you know how many ways there is to win in this game. I tell myself this all the time when I get really overwhelmed, that like, not everybody needs to be Beyonce. I want to be Beyonce, but like, you can have a sustainable life and career by not being at that pinnacle. There are people who live really, really lovely lives.
Yeah.
And you have no idea who they are. So
I think that's most artists, and this might be like ridiculous to say, but it's like, there are people that don't know who Beyonce is. Like, even Beyonce, it's like, has the beehive, right? It's like, it's about the art. My God, is it about the art? But then, you know, she has this amazing relationship with her audience.
Yeah, it comes back to the same fundamentals for sure.
And, you know, like, Beyonce, Taylor Swift, like, they have been cultivating their art and their fan relationships for decades.
Totally. It's hard, because I think now we have this skewed view of, like, overnight success. And we have to remind ourselves of that. Like, they have been, you watch, using Beyonce as, because she's my everything. As you know, the marker, like, how long has she been working and where she started and even before that. And again, it's like, no shortcuts.
Yeah.
Like, even though now we know her today as Queen, like, Renaissance World Tour, it's like, she had to go through the same process that we're going through right now. Or like, you know, as up and coming artists are going through.
I mean, she worked and works. And I mentioned this, but like, when I was an intern at MTV in London 20 years ago, I had to take time code on like a Beyonce documentary. And I was just like, she has worked so hard. And I felt that 20 years ago. And I'm not even saying this is good or healthy, but I remember this part of the documentary where there were like record label people coming to see Destiny's Child, and they were amazing. You know, they were teenagers. But then Matthew Knowles was like, no, 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 stop. Do it again. You spent too much time in the pool yesterday. I'm just like, these people work.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So
Matthew Knowles, man.
Exactly. Do you ever play on other artists' recordings or guest with them at shows?
It's something I'm starting to do now. I think I spent a lot of time making sure my foundation of like my artistry was set.
Yeah.
And now I feel like I can comfortably dip into other people's projects and still like know what my identity is even within that.
I mean, it really is kind of the age of the collab.
It really is. Especially like, there's like an Issa Rae like interview where she talks about like connecting with people. What is it, like laterally, like not like trying to connect with the bigger guys up here, like really collaborating with the people that are around you on your on your same level.
Totally.
And I think that's so important. Like, I think it's all important, but the guy to your right and the girl to your left and like the person over there, like all of these people are rising with you at the same time.
Right.
And it goes to that same like genuine connection of collaborating like that. And not really, not everything has to be like, oh, what do I get out of this?
Yeah.
Again, come back to the art. Like if you genuinely like somebody's art and they're maybe the same level, maybe a little bit smaller than you, like you never know what can come out of that. There's so many songs. I keep going back to TikTok, but just it's like so easily like tangible. There's so many collaborative songs on there that blew up with two people who I had never heard of.
Wow.
But they knew to like, we should combine forces and make it happen. So it's cool.
Absolutely. And again, it was like I was explaining to my teenage cousin who was like freaking out about Jack Antonoff. It's just like, well, that's how this works. It's like artists were touring together. They were friends. Like it's organic.
It's organic for sure.
Are you open to producing, mixing, mastering, remixing, or arranging other artists' music?
Yes. I will be a producer in this life. I will. I already do.
Yeah.
Like, I am in all of my production sessions, and I, you know, comment on everything, and I'm like, hit that thing with the doop-doop-doop. But I, like, want to actually be able to, like, push the buttons and produce, like, a track. Like, that's my goal for myself in the next year, I would say, is start to finish, completely produce a track by myself.
Yeah.
Because I'm already there. I just need to get in there. Mixing, no. Mastering, no.
AI will take care of that.
Right.
No offense to our mixing and mastering engineers.
Right. I'm like, all the really heady stuff, I'll save it for someone else. But the artistic stuff, I want to do that.
What about writing for other artists or with other artists?
Yeah, I've started to do that more too. I think kind of going back to the same like collaborative thing, I just was really so hard-nosed and focused on like defining what Madison Rose was to me and only writing for myself and getting that. And now that I feel like that's in a really great place, I'm like, okay, I could step out, write for other people. And it's so fun to like take on kind of a different personality and it's someone else's like emotions and that in that world and write their story. It's really cool. Or help them write their story, I guess.
And to your point on authentic collaborations, like I feel weird saying this, but like I have felt that on this podcast. Like I've had students ask me like, oh, did you just get the biggest people you know to be on? I'm like, I got the right people.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that is like, now this artist is huge, but like I had Justin Vernon from Bon Iver on, and that was all, that couldn't have been more organic.
Yeah, amazing.
I was teaching at NYU, and I polled the students because I was like, okay, who is someone that you think is doing innovative in whatever I was teaching on, which was management at the time, because you'll get to know like my world and my network, but I want to know what you're interested in. Mm. And so what topped the poll was Justin Vernon or someone from Bon Iver's management. And I take responsibility for this as an educator, but I didn't feel like they were really connecting with what I was trying to get across. So I was like, his story really brings to life what I am trying to get across. So I will see if we can get the artist, which is a huge ask, but I do know their management. So at least I'm sure their managers be happy to do it. And they said yes. And NYU gave really great advice. This was before the pandemic. They're like, you're in New York. Go to them. You don't always have to bring the... And of course, this is like before the pandemic. So now it's like there's Zoom and we're a little more comfortable with that. So we went on a little field trip down to the King's Theater. It was just like 30, 35 students. And I did a voice memo for my own critique. I didn't ask. I had no plans of releasing that. And then when I listened to it, I was like, oh, this really brings chapter one, get your art together, to life perfectly. Yeah. So then I had to go back to their management and be like, I swear I just recorded this crappy voice memo just for me, but would you be open to me releasing this? And they're like, yeah, that's cool. I didn't know he doesn't give a lot of interviews. Mm. So that like totally blew up, where I sometimes see people go after like, oh, this is going to be big. But a lot of times, like, people you think that are big, like, do a lot of interviews. Yeah. So again, it was that authenticity that, and I just watched kind of like your viral moment. I just watched that thing like take off.
Oh
yeah. So again, I just wanted to highlight my own little version of authenticity.
And it goes back to like what I was saying, ask the question.
Yes.
Like if you were just too in your head about it.
Right.
That never would have happened.
Totally.
Like a no isn't going to kill you. Just ask.
Exactly. And again, the whole process was organic. The students thought of it. I wanted my own critique, you know, and then I was like, oh wait, this is exactly what I'm trying to get across, which I feel weird saying this, is like how an artist might feel creatively, you know, instead of like, this is going to be a hit, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say. Cool. Those are my questions. Anything else you'd like to add?
I just want to say thank you to you for all you're doing. And thanks to everyone that's here live. So cool. Yeah. And everyone on the live stream.
Yeah, that means a lot.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to open it up to the audience. Does anyone want to ask Madison a question, or no pressure if you have any of the revenue stream questions? Yeah, get on up there. Sorry, A+ student.
Oh, totally.
Thank you so much for coming. That was so informative.
Oh, good.
Because I thought it would just be like a review, but this is totally something new. So I guess my kind of question is, it's so cool to see that like music can like is your thing, because that like right now music is a hobby, but yeah. I treat it like a thing.
Good.
And it's just like I'm in the position where it's like, okay, I'm working kind of as little as possible to spend as much time on the art as possible.
Yeah.
But then part of me is like, well, what if I got more of a job that's kind of music adjacent, like marketing, and then I could kind of develop skills? Because like the job I'm at right now, I don't feel like I'm like really growing, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, what are your thoughts on like before you like can make music your thing, of like sustaining yourself, where the time should go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that getting a job adjacently is great, because it can teach you skills. Then it's like you're working on something that then you can apply directly to your art. I would just say, if you do go for the marketing job, just like don't get sucked into the machine. And just make sure you're still carving out the time for yourself. I never really went the route of like getting like a label kind of adjacent job or anything like that, just because I was worried about that for myself. But that's because I know myself, and I knew that I needed to push myself in an uncomfortable way to make me hungry to go get it. And that was why I worked like 4 different restaurant jobs. And I was like looking down the pipe of, okay, in this 3 months, I have these shows and I need this amount of money to live. And then I just like quit everything, but I am crazy. So I think it's I don't believe in starving artists, because I like believe we all need to have more for ourselves. But I think I think you only take the job if you're genuinely like, these are skills that I don't know. It's the same reason why I think you go to college, right? It's like, if you're like, okay, these are skills I don't know, I don't have, this will teach me this, and then I can apply it over here, then do it. If it's just kind of like, I want to maybe be adjacently, you know, I think it's just having a plan, if that helps.
So when you were working like the 4 restaurant jobs, was a voice in your head like, is this the right way? Should I?
Oh my God, all the time. And you're going to ask yourself that. Even now, I don't work restaurant jobs. I'm like, am I doing the right thing? Yeah. But that's just like your own inner saboteur, I think. And I also feel like life has a way of supporting you, where like I was working those jobs. Actually, really crazy sidebar like story. But one job I was working, I was a maitre d', and like Skrillex came up to the stand. You know what I mean? I think life has a really crazy way of meeting you halfway when you like believe in yourself. And it doesn't, as long as you wake up every day and you're like, I know what the goal is, I know who I am, and I know what I'm working towards, I really genuinely believe you could be anywhere and you'll still get your moment, and you'll still meet the people you're supposed to meet. It's just like, does it feel good for you? Like if you're like, yeah, I really want to take that marketing job, hell yeah, go take that.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't feel right to you, then like that's like listen to your body, I think. Therapy, sorry.
No, I love it.
That totally makes sense. Yeah.
I would say too, like, you know, Peter Shapiro was talking about like a lot of the staff at Brooklyn Bowl are musicians.
Yeah.
Maybe go apply for a job. Then you're in the scene. Then there are shows every night. There's people in and out of there. I just moderated a panel that the CEO of Banzoogle was on. She mentioned, like, yeah, most of our, like, support staff are musicians, right? So I bet that's a remote job. So I don't know, like, if you're interested in working at Brooklyn Bowl or whatever, but those are just some ideas I had just, you know, from the past few weeks of kind of musician day jobs where you're still in it.
I think it's anything that's affording you to still be creative. Yes, exactly. That's really like what it comes down to me.
Cool. All right. Thank you so much. I'm Trevor, by the way.
Nice to meet you, Trevor.
Anyone else? Yeah, get up there. Our other A-plus student. Although I think you missed some classes. I'm just teasing.
Taking attendance and everything. Yeah. Hi, my name is Drew.
Hi, Drew.
Okay, let's see if I can compose this question. Because you touched on live performance and monetizing live performance in some ways. That just triggered a million questions I had in my head about how one does that. I know a lot of times there might be somebody running the board, and I'm thinking, well, what if I said, hey, you know, could you kind of put this on a, you know, can you just kind of do this recording for me? And maybe I just give them a, you know, a small stipend. They might shrug and say, fine, I'll take $500 or something for it. And then my question is, once that recording is finalized, if I then take it and use it, do I collect royalties wherever I place it on the internet? And kind of connected to that, you know, when you go to a live performance, there could be 50 seats in the room and 50 cell phones go up. And everybody's recording the show. Is there any way to monetize that or capture that when they wind up on other people's Instagram stories and doing all of that? I just want, this is what
you
I
are
wonder,
A plus.
I'm visualizing this live performance scenario. I mean, right? Every performance, there's just a sea of cell phones up. What happens to that?
Yeah. You always go deep.
Well, I'm just visualizing.
No, it's great. It's great.
If I'm sitting in, right, every performance, you're sitting there and everybody's got a recording of the performance.
Yep.
I mean, if you have a very visual performance, everybody's recorded that.
Right.
Usually when I see postings, they don't post the whole thing.
Right.
Right. They might post a little bit.
Yeah.
But somebody might be posting the whole thing.
Yeah.
So what does one do?
Really good question. Okay. So let's start with the first thing, recording your own shows. Sorry, concert promoter friends, but as shows get bigger, like especially if you go up to the sound person or whatever and ask them to do that, they're going to ask for an origination fee. And so origination fees are really expensive as venues get bigger. So this is the part I'm sorry, not sorry for. I would say just like if you can have some sort of setup like on stage, you know, like if you can record it yourself. And then however you want to release it, be like, this is my Boston show or this is my whatever show. Like, I just would not say the venue is what I would recommend for that. Like, I used to tour manage, and in general, my rule was do it till you get yelled at, and if you get yelled at, come find me. So that, like, I would just do it, like, as you're starting out. Like, no one's going to be like, oh, like, Drew played Philly or whatever, you know? And that's a really good question as far as fan-generated content. I don't think there's any royalties being paid on that. I think that's, like, a deeper question for, like, a music law panel. I mean, it should happen now that I'm thinking about it, and, like, that could be a positive use of AI, right? Like, when you're talking about content ID. And now, that definitely happens on YouTube.
That's what I was thinking as well.
Because of content ID. I don't think there's any content ID on, like, Instagram. I'm not sure on TikTok. But there's definitely, like, the opposite of content ID where they're going to know, like, oh, you don't own the rights to this music. So that, like, you may have just thought of a really brilliant new thing.
Yeah.
Well, I remember people, I even remember years ago when Facebook just came out and there was a whole question about how do I monetize my little vacation photo sitting in front of Carnival Cruises, and now Carnival Cruises has an ad.
Totally.
You know, how do I get paid for that? So it's the same kind of thing, you know, it's people are posting these things. What you know, your image is everywhere, you know, what happens to that?
You know, but I would say you could get creative with it and be like, hey, if you guys want to send all your content to me, you know, like we can put this up for a donation or whatever. And like, I'll share any royalties with you, or like we'll create an NFT or, you know, something like that. So to me, that's like what that's sparking in me is like a way to get creative with it. Like, okay, here's your perspective on what I was doing. Here's this person's perspective. Here's my perspective.
Your fans, your real hardcore fans, they'll just put it on a tripod and they'll do the whole thing. And then maybe you have...
Yeah. So maybe you put it up for like donation on your website or something and you're like, okay, I'm going to keep 50% of the donations and the other 50%, we're just going to divide it equally amongst however many people submitted content and have like a standard work for hire that you can get, you know, from co-signed, and then you're good to go. And if they don't want to sign it, then they, you know, their content doesn't get used. But artists do that all the time with like fan generated merch, or maybe they don't do it, the work for hire all the time, that's what you need to do, right? So it's like, if like we've done a lot of fan generated merch over the years, and like one out of 50 fans is like, oh, I don't want to sign this thing. It's like, well, then your art's not going to get used, you know? So, you know, as long as you're open and transparent and it's fair for everyone, I think that's a really cool way to get creative.
Okay.
But I'll bring that up. I mean, I don't know like Mark Zuckerberg, but it's like, you know, when this comes up, like with Future of Music or different panels and stuff, that's a really great question. It's like, or it's a question for like ASCAP and BMI, right? Like, am I getting performance royalties when someone's, you know, posting my concert video? That's really, really smart.
Your lyrics? I mean, all of that is...
I told you, you go deep. I love it.
But thank you so much, actually.
Thank you.
Awesome. And I see some fidgeting.
Last call. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
I meant fidgeting for a question, not like get me out of here.
Hi.
Hello. At the beginning of the interview, you mentioned that you moved from L.A., to New York. I was wondering, was there a particular reason that you thought New York would be better? Is the experience been different? And
yeah. So I was like, as I was saying, you know, in LA for 15 years, and just every time I'd visited New York, I just like, this feels like home, but it just wasn't ready. And I can genuinely say my move to New York had nothing to do with my career. That wasn't the, at first it really was just like, I need to go somewhere where I'm happy. And then also coupled with like what we know of the advance of social media. Like I was like, well, right now at that moment, my biggest success was coming from posting online. And I was like, I can do this anywhere. My album was already done with my collaborators in LA. However, since moving here, there's actually a ton of opportunities I've received that I would not have gotten if I didn't live in New York. And I do think it's like a big industry lie that there's like no music industry in New York. Like, I think a lot of people feel, especially if you're in the pop scene, which I am, like you need to be in LA. I don't think that. I think you have to go where you're appreciated, because I feel like I'm building a lot more genuine fan contact here, but just by the nature of how New York is, and it's so community based, and so it's been really amazing for me. That's why I'm like, I don't know, like if your music is really connecting with people in Minnesota, like move to Minnesota, like, and you can find those analytics on Chartmetric, like really, like you. I think it all starts with, even going back to your question, like about what job to take. Like, it really is about your gut and what's going to feed you as a person, because then that's going to feed your art.
I'd like to add to that as a fellow Midwesterner, like I love New York City so much, but you're exactly right. Like what feels like home to you is super important. So like New York, to me, on one hand, we're the center. I think New York is the center of the universe with everything.
I do agree.
Like food, just like whatever culture, like whatever you're into, it's like to me, like the best is here. But you're exactly right. It's whatever is home for you. Like ultimately the reasons why I love New York is like, I love our parks. I love our pools. I love my farmers markets, you know? And like back to Justin Vernon for a second, like he's built an empire from northern Wisconsin. Like I'm at least from Milwaukee, basically. Like this sounds disrespectful, but it's not. We just call that massive swath of land up north. That's just what it's called when it's actually like a whole bunch of cities and beautiful places. So it's like, yeah, he's frankly built an empire from the middle of nowhere, which you can do now. No offense to Eau Claire, you're not in the middle of nowhere, but you know what I mean. You can record from anywhere, you can distribute from anywhere, and you can market yourself from anywhere. And actually, when I had him on, the students had asked me in class, like, do I have to live in New York, LA, Nashville, or whatever? And I mentioned how I met Justin's original manager at South by Southwest in like 2008, and we were talking about Wisconsin. And Kyle's, not even rent, I know this was a long time ago, but still, it was still shocking. So like, at the time, you could get a decent room for rent in Milwaukee for like $500 a month. Mm-hmm. Kyle's mortgage for a home in northern Wisconsin was $200. And Justin's like, ha ha, you know? So it's just like, take all this stuff into consideration. I know artists that, pay for all of their living expenses in Wisconsin through their streaming royalties.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like a big lie that you need to be anywhere specific. Like, I think if it's feeding you, it's feeding you.
Yeah.
But we've advanced so far past that. And then, like, you can take trips to these places.
That's true.
Go to LA for a month, set up your camps before that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you're not, same thing if you weren't living in New York. Like, I don't think we have to be, like, so finite about where we are anymore.
I love that. So true. All right. I think that's a wrap. Get up there.
Yeah, I was waiting for you, Smiley. I knew it was coming.
Who stood patiently by the door. Right. Thank you for doing that.
It's in the eyes. Nice to meet you, Madison.
Nice.
For everyone that doesn't know me yet, my name is Joshua D'Amata. I'm a content strategist by day, marketer by night, or other way around.
Can you hire Trevor? Just kidding.
Yeah. And my question is, when you noticed, when was that pivotal moment where you made that transition from working those four jobs to being able to live off of music? Was there a particular revenue stream that really hit it off for you? Particular opportunity? Love to hear more about your story there.
Yeah, totally. It was a combination. It was around the time that I did the funding with Beat Bread in combination with all the live shows that I knew I had coming up. So for me, in my life, like, I have to take bite-sized parts of my life and plan it out. So, like, I knew it was a risk, but I was like, I know that for the next, like, 4 months, I would be fine. So what would happen if I gave myself full commitment, 100% of my time with music for 4 months when I was like, I know my album's coming out. So it's like taking calculated risks.
Yeah.
So, those were, like, the two streams that I knew. And then just kind of worked and some things, like, just totally fall from the sky. But still trying to be calculated about it, I think.
Makes sense. And, like, keeping your eyes open to where your career currently is and what's happening.
Yeah. And also moving to New York was, like, so amazing because I feel like there's a culture here where, like, you learn to hustle in ways you just, like, didn't even know. And so then it was, you know, expanding on, like, okay, what influencer gigs can I get? Or, you know, am I going to host a party? Then can I go host this party? But then tell them, like, actually, I know you have me as a host, but I really want to perform, and then I'll perform next week, and then I'll do this, and just kind of expanding upon that and just really working for it. Like, not everyone can do this because, like, 9-to-5s have a certain security, and that's, like, something you have to think about when you make that big of a decision is now, like, you're your own security, so you really have to be looking at every single thing that you can do and monetize, I guess.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Love it. Did I see a hand, or was that a twitch? You want to ask a question? Okay. Awesome. Well, Madison, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank
I really
you so
appreciate
much for
it.
Having
Let's give it up for Madison.
Thank you.
Love it. So that's a wrap for this episode. Join us tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern in real life here at Tower Labs in Brooklyn or via live stream on our YouTube, as we'll be discussing how to repeat and grow with Lucas Silveria of The Clicks. In the meantime, thanks so much to Madison, Michael Benedetti and Daniel Graves of the Benedetti Group, podcast manager Mike Zimmerlich, engineer Nathan Kane, Matthew Wong for composing the show's music, Danny, David, and Jake at Tower Records, the Ally Coalition, Liquid Death, Hal Leonard, and of course, the Mayor's Office of Media and Entertainment's New York Music Month for making this all happen. We'll see you tomorrow.